interrupting the current neo-Ukrainian climate-challenged, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism. To bring you behind the woodshed, this is Cricketude-Busting Episode BTWRLM 578. And remember, being free is not a spectator sport. To get you behind the woodshed, as we're going to find out, this guy right here is going to tell you the same thing near the end of the story. New Jersey court throws out 80 charges against Brave gym owner defying Governor Murphy's tyrannical lockdown orders. Suck my DK, Phil Murphy. Ian Smith, co-owner of Atilus Gym in Belmar, New Jersey, has achieved a monumental victory. The saga began in May of 2020 when Smith reopened Atilus Gym, challenging Murphy's administration's mandates, which he and his supporters argue are unconstitutional and detrimental to small business. The confrontation escalated in July 2020 when police officers forcefully arrested Smith after he continually violated state's shutdown orders. A swarm of police officers burst through the door of Atilus Gym in Belmar, New Jersey, arrested the owners for violating Governor Murphy's authoritarian shutdown order. The state's aggressive response did not end with the arrest. In a controversial move, Governor Murphy and his administration seized $165,000 from the gym's accounts, funds that Smith claims were amassed through donations and apparel sales to support the gym's legal battles. This act was a punitive strike meant to cripple the gym financially and serve as a stern warning to others who might consider similar defiance. This is done in the middle of an ongoing litigation defending ourselves against these fines or 80 charges, the revocation of our business license, and the unconstitutional health department shutdown. This was never about protection. It was always about control, said Smith in a video statement dated January 2021. On Saturday, Smith announced that the court dropped all the charges with prejudice. This means the state is utterly barred from refiling these charges against Smith and Atilus Gym, signaling a definitive victory for the small business owner and a stinging rebuke of Governor Murphy's authoritarian tactics. Smith did not mince words, directly challenging Governor Murphy with the phrase that has since gone viral, "Suck my DK, Phil Murphy." This victory opens a battlefield again and gives us options to continue to push back to bring justice to treasonous actions of Phil Murphy and his lackeys. Again, thank you to all who supported us. We could not have done it without you. Special thanks to our fearless attorneys, John McCann and Giancarlo Gioni, some of the most high-profile attorneys around the country from our case, knowing it would be a long, hard road, would make them a target of the state. They wouldn't pick it up. These two gentlemen stood with us through the darkest days of the storm. They have not flinched, never once cared about being in front of the cameras to gain notoriety from their work. More updates later, he said. He goes on to say, right here, folks, nobody is coming to save you. Save yourself. Spit on your hands and hoist the black flag. No quarter. I was telling you all just to set your records in those health officials and the duties they failed, and you should have been able to stop the governors as well. The problem was that not hardly anybody stood up, and this was a fight that's lasted all the way till now, since then, 4 years, on absolutely lawless orders. It's not inconsequential to hear without prejudice attached to that. 80 charges. And then they attacked him financially. Not much different than Canada, if you think that there's like a separation between these nations. And that should give you pause for where you are. You really are having to defend yourself. And I've advocated for years, over a decade. Make your records. Get the black and white. And bring that forward. It might have been a little bit quicker there. As I told you, there was remedies inside that communicable disease law that would have released this pretty quickly in the beginning. But this is what it takes. I'd like to know why they just dropped those charges. It didn't sound like there was too much going on other than the judge seeing that it was wrong. How is it so clearly wrong? 80 charges, so clearly wrong. In a country where it's so easy for the prosecutor to maintain a 92% to 98% conviction rate. This speaks volumes. But thank you for stepping up for yourself. Thank you for all those that supported him. And this is not over, and this is not going to get any better. They're using the same diabolical tactics as I've been talking to you. Sanctions. Take all your money because that's what they know you survive on. That's what this new digital gulag coming on is if you don't resist it and start making your own. They call it optional now, but in this case, they didn't make it so optional, even though the law was there to stop them. The law was not fulfilled, as I've talked over endless hours on this subject matter. I still haven't heard much of a reflection. Now, I would feel that these attorneys may have done very well, but they certainly didn't apply the law that said the state hadn't fulfilled its obligations and duties to actually demonstrate the exigency for what they were doing. Speaking of taking matters into your own hands, because nobody's coming to save you, not of the world here. As we saw the whole of the world officials fail through their public health duties, we read NIH advisor David Morans can't recall if he deleted COVID records, laughs off Fauci FOIA evasions. A top advisor of the National Institute of Health deleted records critical to uncovering the origins of COVID-19. And I'd like to have you folks listening very careful and start to real time adjust what you're reading, understand what they're actually saying, what they aren't saying, and where this ends up going, what the point about this ends up being, so that you keep your mind active on what was supposed to happen. And if you train yourself to do this in real time, you're not having to gather a whole bunch of things to go research, because your research has really already been done. You're just applying the law and the facts to what they're saying. You can watch the deceptions coming down very quickly. I'm stopping to say that right here, which I didn't intend to say when I started reading, but if you see that the records uncovering the origins of COVID-19, that was just like a big red light for me. Hopefully it's for you as well. Origins of COVID-19, define those for what they were and what they applied to actually and what did or did not exist. And you really have the answer to this whole thing right there, but I just wanted to point that out. When I read this news, it's noticed. You just read for all the facts that are sitting there. We can come up to determinations pretty quickly. And then you see the news. You see this guy's, they named it evasion. That's a crime, if there was a duty. And so that's the other biting question. Is there a real duty at the federal level here relative to what their inquiry is? And then what about the inquiry then? So going back, origins of COVID-19, and I used a secret back channel to help Dr. Anthony Fauci and a federal grantee that funded gain-of-function research in Wuhan, China, evade transparency. Well, again, what have I said about transparency? They want things to be transparent. You'll see right through them from your perspective. However, reading here, I learned from our FOIA lady here how to make emails disappear after I FOIA'd, but before the search starts. Morans wrote in a February 24th, 2021 email, plus I deleted most of those early emails after sending them to Gmail. There is no worry about FOIAs. I can either send stuff to Tony on his private Gmail or hand it to him at his work or at his house, Morans wrote in an April 21, 2021 email. He is too smart to let colleagues send him stuff that could cause trouble. Well, we are all smart enough to know to never have smoking guns. And if we did, we wouldn't put them in emails. And if we found them, we'd delete them, read a June 16th, 2020 email sent just 2 months after Echo Health's Wuhan grant was initially suspended. The 35-page memo by subcommittee chairman staff also suggests Fauci's Morans foreign boss at the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease participated, quote, in a conspiracy amongst the highest levels of the agency to, quote, hide, close quote, and potentially, quote, destroy official records regarding the origins of COVID-19. I keep running over that phrase. I hope most of you already have the answer there. We already know what the origins are. I'll just give you that as a clue going out the gate. We already know the origin. So this is just, anyway, I'll keep reading. Quote, it is not anti-science to hold you accountable for defying the public's trust and misusing official resources, Ranking Member Raul Ruiz, Democrat of California, said. So as I look through this story, this entire story is a red herring. Munch on it with the bagels and cream cheese if you want to waste your time and be no further to the almost impossible dream of accountability in this country on this point, which I do hope would come along, but I'm not so sure seeing it. So this is a much longer article when you go read it. And I think it's a, myself, all these stuff inform us, but this would be a time waster if you bought into it, a bit into it too much. Let me kind of close this down a little bit quick. Let me finish by mentioning an important statement that was made in the article. Tabak has dismissed the idea that gain-of-function research led to the creation of SARS-CoV-2, but another eco-health grant proposal has drawn scrutiny from its similarity to COVID-19. And there was another clue. They named two different things there, SARS-CoV-2 and COVID-19. And so there's a gameplay going on in this whole hearing, like there usually is. But you're holding people accountable for defying the public's trust and misusing official resources starts a whole lot closer to home in this matter. And this is the other thing, that the federal government's looking at this relative to the NIH is really off point as well. Is it true to dismiss the gain-of-function research led to the creation of SARS-CoV-2? Can you think that through? Why? Because gain-of-function has to do with organic organisms. SARS-CoV-2 is not an organism, but a novel synthetic protein construct. So recall here, COVID-19, that phrase of those characters put together, COVID-19 is only the symptoms caused by an infectious agent. SARS-CoV-2 was said to be that agent, but it's a novel substance made in a lab and patented by the CDC itself. Remember, that's the reports, the patents. In 2003, it was patented. They had a fight over that. And the CDC wrangled it back from the patent office. They took it away. They invalidated it. Then they gave it back. So everyone's missed all that. The SARS-CoV-2 was already known. It was an invented, novel substance. It wasn't organic. How did I track this down? Everybody should have been tracking this down through your local communicable disease law. It was defined all in there, what was supposed to happen. And all this is talking aside of it. And they're making big waves around it, and yet it's not really applicable. So gain of function, as we look at, that function, that inquiry, is irrelevant to the more pressing duty of the local official to the non-fraudulently demonstrate a natural infectious agent, and then what the intended treatment, called a vaccine, was needed to do for that would have been to stop transmission of the natural infectious agent. So there's no natural infectious agent to cause any communicable symptoms called COVID-19, or as its called, its common cold partner in crime was called, just COVID without the 19, the year designation. So that 19 attached to the year was even wrong, because it was actually COVID-03 is what it really should have been. And that would have been the symptoms attached to the 03 patent of a certain substance that caused those, your body to respond to it that way. So there are no origins here, because relative to communicable disease law, it has to be a natural organ. That's what that bat story was all about. They needed to figure something they could attach to a natural source. That's what that whole thing was about. In any regard, any origins would not be the place as well, but the cause by an infectious agent. No one anywhere non-fraudulently demonstrated that agent pursuant to local communicable disease law. Therefore, there's no dual use possible by that same law, irrespective of any gain of function. There is no such thing as gain of function as to symptoms, also known as COVID-19 or COVID, as well. You don't gain of function a symptom, a fever, a cough, a sneeze, loss of taste. You don't gain of function that. But this is what they've got us wrapped up in. It's COVID-19 or COVID is not speaking to the infectious agent at all, and SARS-CoV-2 is not a communicable infectious agent. SARS-CoV-2 is a novel, in other words, man-made lipidized protein string, the data for which was transmitted to the world from Wuhan, as international convention allows, but not of any virus itself. But essentially, there is no other virus. If the communicable infectious agent were natural, as required in local communicable disease law, it could not be patented, identified as novel, therefore it admits to be not natural. Novel is what you patent. Go read the patent law. The admission of any gain of function defines a bioweapon under Title 50, and if a dual-use, military and civilian use exception cannot be found, it is a prohibited bioweapon pursuant to 18 U.S.C. 175. So read this stuff, folks. It's right there for us to see. The novel substance is now acknowledged not to stop the transmission, as we heard in the news. Therefore, well, we saw that before in the records as well. You heard that behind the woodshed. I was reading those things to us. Because why? They related to the communicable disease thing. That was what we're focused on. About five or six things for important things were needed to be done there by the government. And none of it was. So these can't stop transmission. Therefore, it does not enjoy any dual use if it were natural and had been subjected to a gain-of-function application. There's nothing here that can be rationally attached to any of this. In actual fact here, then, no gain-of-function is possible. Lab-made proteins causing harm are not a gain-of-function of a natural infectious agent, but the very function of the chemical substance itself. Why Congress is focusing on this red herring symptoms has no basis in law or reason, unless it goes well with cream cheese and bagels, I suppose, because in this regard, there can be no accountability in the current COVID fishing expedition going on as well, not the way they're going at it. This sort of federal inquiry is an obstruction to accountability because the material dereliction is from the states, not the federal. And I'm going through this because they want to keep talking about this disease X and all these endless diseases. Now we got the bird flu and it's now affecting our milk. If we don't keep track of how this thing worked out and understand quickly, as I've been reading it, all this stuff really should have come to your mind, really. And if it's not, you need to go read these sources of the law to understand what your basis is going to be so you can do this. And if I'm in error, tell me. Let me know how I'm in error. There hasn't been anybody in 4.5 years that can be able to figure this one out. They don't even want to respond. The worst type of crickets to be. To be ignorant of a thing that was used as an attack weapon when all the answers of explaining that weapon and how to defeat it were right there for us to do, and we didn't even have to breathe hard try it. So they're going to bring a lot of this stuff on. I told you, this is across all kinds of subject matter. So the federal imposition here, while everyone thinks it's a great thing and we may get some outcome, is really the wrong direction because it's actually state authority. That's our constitutional establishment. Why people will promote the constitutional establishment and then abandon it right here has been a mind-boggler to me. I just can't quite get this one. But the obstruction here by these hearings also hides the knowledge of what people needed to do that I've been talking about to protect themselves and what they could trust. You're not going to trust it in a guy that says, oh, this is a violation of trust. That's just him talking. That makes it sound good, like he's tracking somebody down. These folks had no authority to make a statement to anybody. And they can't be held to anything, actually. So I don't understand what the big focus is yet. It would take quite a few steps to get to them. As I've talked about, I've explained about why here. So in other words, even if the origins of flu symptoms are found, even if the scapegoat is created that appeases the natives here, no one will be wiser as to stopping the next attack. This is the danger, if you will. This is the problem with these federal investigation. The answer was as simple as relying on due process protections within local communicable disease law, which would have inoculated people from all these gain-of-function, dual-use, SARS-CoV-2, COVID-swindle canards. They're all off point. There is no spoon, right? I've said that before. There is no spoon. There was nothing here, and they got people to believe in it. Even arguing, I didn't do something. There was nothing to do. If they didn't come after anybody that was able to resist or not act, there was nothing to do anyway. Those that they came after, all they had to do was start to assert and press the communicable disease law. We didn't even get that from the restaurant owner who spent 4 years, and the government, the judge, finally stepped up. Didn't step up in the first days to do this. No, waits over 4 years to eliminate those charges with prejudice. There's a whole other analysis. I won't go through that one. That alone just proves it right off the bat that gym could not be the source. It was never defined. That owner was never defined to demonstrated to be the carrier. None of the people in it were, and that should have never flown. But you watch how people in power will try to destroy to keep that power, to make it look like that power is real. In a way, this is good that we do have these judges for as much as the delay, the injustice that happened for 4 years. We do have these opinions, these second opinions, if you will, that should be there. And I've come to learn they're really not there all the time. And so it's a lot more challenging. Why you really have to be versed and you have to come from a foundation. You don't just talk out of our opinion. But here, speaking of Covey swindle canards, we move on now. Moving on through. UK Army unit labeled accurate COVID reporting as malinformation. Now, let me just interject quickly. The only accurate COVID reporting would have been that there was no spoon. There was nothing there. You heard that behind the woodshed. Require the officials to demonstrate, non-fraudulently demonstrate an infectious agent. Because otherwise, there's nothing there. So I'll just throw that in. That's how simple and fast that was. It wouldn't have been simple and fast to execute because you got these tyrants out there. But this is where we've allowed, we the people have not controlled that, have not demanded that, and done it in mass, because that's what, is, as I've said, it starts to take. Then you notice the UK Army is involved in this. I told you this is a global military operation, Operation Hindsight 2020. How is it so consistent that the military has been involved? I've done the episodes to explain what's going on behind the scenes, the cognitive warfare, the multiple dimensional dominance that's going on. I don't understand why, but there it is. Someone's decided that they've got to defend themselves, and everything becomes a risk. Everything becomes a national security event. And that's them, they figuring out how they were going to pull the carpet from everything you thought you knew. But moving here to the Army unit labeled accurate COVID reporting as malinformation, that's not unknown to the people behind the woodshed that listen my broadcast, my content. It's been labeled malinformation for a long time, and it hasn't been. And how could it be? I'm speaking just from the law and through its application. More details are coming out about the COVID-era activity of the UK Army unit, the 77th Brigade, which country's government used to spy on citizens, suppress dissent around issues related to the pandemic, and flag content for social media sites to label or remove. The unit, said to be of the PSYOP psychological operations variety, carried out a series of controversial and even suspected unlawful activities over this period of time, although in early 2021, the UK government flat out denied it was involved in any kind of actions against British citizens. Now, let me just point out this court case with this Jim shows you for 4 years this has been unlawful activities by the government. If you just extend why those charges were dropped and you understand what the local communicable disease law, it has always been unlawful activities by the government. So them saying that it wasn't involved to actions against British citizens is a lie on top of that. Talk about trust being broken. There's a whole lot more here. I just wish people would actually take it to heart and finally enough is enough and start doing things that they think they can do with their skill set to just start to shake the machine till it's just done, and we'd figure something else out. But a batch of subsequent responses to Freedom of Information requests, including those filed a year later by the Big Brother privacy-promoting NGO, tell a different story. Again, you see, the FOIAs are very, very important. Getting information from the government is one of the only other ways other than good journalism that we're going to see this stuff. So, as I've been advocating for a long time, and remember, the FOIA, what we call FOIA, Freedom of Information Act, that's an act of Congress. That's a federal thing. That's the federal side. Your states have open records requests. They have their own standards. So make sure that when you're making a state request, a request for a state record, that you follow the laws for that. And there's statutes to do that. So it's not, they actually give you, the form is reading the statute to see what you need to say and do. And then they give, within that, they'll give you what they can deny, and then you have challenges you can put. They'll put a code, you go read the code, and if it doesn't fit, you can sue them for giving you that information because it wasn't improperly denied. So it's kind of neat that way. It gives you a couple of tools. You're not helpless here. It may take a while, but you get enough people together, they start to expose this stuff. Look how many years it's been taking to expose all this. The things I was telling you it was going to take. It's actually taken a little bit longer. But part of my, I've been dismayed that, you know, people just weren't responsive to this. What I thought was a clear victory for the people, had they stepped forward, and really hardly anybody did. The more pertinent question may be why the UK government decided to rely so heavily on the military. The country's Air Force, RAF, was also involved in order to monitor and censor people's discussions about things like masks, lockdown, vaccines, and why these soldiers were instructed to turn on their fellow citizens. Take that note right there as well. Military was quick to label this as malinformation, But apparently the code word for making sure the government is perceived positively, regardless of whether reporting content is accurate. And that's an absolute key, that one of the things that needs to be stated is that they've literally lost the trust. They lost the faith by the people. They cannot get our consent. And they may have done an irreparable harm to that. That may not be able to be gotten back by people in government because of what they did. And it's going to take a lot of people in government through time, faithfully following complying with law, if the people assert that back before you can begin to trust them. And this is a vigilance thing. You can never, like, even blink. So in my mind, they've tore it. They've tore it and they've rent the cloth. It can't be refixed. So if we're going to keep what we have, we're going to have to just challenge them now at every turn, which I don't think is a bad thing. It's just a lot more work. It's kind of what we had to do. It actually focuses our attention, if we'll do it, to be able to. It gives us a place where they were taking us out as extremists, so-called. It gives you a place to discuss and challenge. And that's what I've been trying to tell you. You don't get yourself in a place that they can control in the dialogue or in the methodology. You got to put the black and white they were obligated to before. Then they can't call you wrong. They can't name you wrong because you have a foundation. Otherwise, it becomes nebulous. When you see the militaries involved, they've got their people on it. As I've been talking to you, they're so far ahead of us as a people. They know us better than themselves, and they're applying those rules and a whole lot more. Probably, and there's lots more we probably don't even know. Some's coming out. People are complacent. They think, oh, now we get to see it. I don't think we're seeing even 1% of what's going on. And we're not responding to any of it, even now, as bad as we can see it. One gym owner did, and didn't really win. You hear it. The fight continues for him. Now they go back to see if we can get some remedy for all this theft, the government theft and abuse and tyranny that went on. So UK is wrong. The army, they denied. They were all involved. They continued to be involved. So there you go. Nobody is coming to save you. And you could have done it yourself here, as far as I can tell. UK military is not coming to save the UK people. No, they went and attacked them. They lied to them to put up a narrative that was a lie, a fraud, a COVID swindle. On top of other things, that's not the only thing going on. Remember, it ushered in, it set the seeds of dysfunction into the system to allow the future that they want in. That's what the digital gulag's about. So don't think it's over. This is just this is going to be the test. Would we look back and see how they did it to us in 9/11, or us in America? Would the world look in, and would we understand what was going on in the method that they're using? And I have to say, we didn't. And it's going to continue. It's going to come on. And it's coming on at blazing fast speeds, faster than internet. I know, that's a joke. But even now, you got to save yourself. You're going to have to prepare for yourself. Do it locally. Do it by your local foundation, how you do your, get your situation set up around you. Everybody does this. And this is what you have to do. And the UK government is telling people that as well. Not just the gym owner. But the UK government urges citizens to stock up on food and water. A new website tells people how to prepare for all sorts of disasters. They're just telling everybody who was a prepper here just years ago, a few years ago, you're just extremists, remember? Don't hold more than 3 days' food or you're kind of a lunatic. And you're harming everybody else. See how fast this changes. Watch this one, though. This is a very interesting statement. They're not really giving us their cards, but look at the state of the world. And this website pops up. Britain's would be wise to start stockpiling food and water and develop a household emergency plan to be ready to face all sorts of disasters. A new website created by the government states, dubbed Prepare, and presented by Deputy Prime Minister Oliver Dowden, the webpage encourages people not to leave the safety solely in the hands of the authorities. We are working ahead of time to equip the whole of society. Remember that phrase, the whole of society to prepare for and even prevent the next shock while delivering a clear and robust plan that is so vital to our national defenses, he said. The list of potential shocks the UK could be facing, according to the government, includes anything from cyber attacks and power outages to flooding, biohazards, solar flares, a new pandemic, and maybe even a nuclear war. The way the UK is poking the bear. But the story goes on to tell us, according to the poll conducted by London Defence Conference, only 15% of people in the UK have emergency kits at home, and more than 40% do not have 3 days worth of non-perishable food and water supplies. And I'm going to say this becomes a very big deal. I've learned pretty firsthand how demanding your supplying yourself is. And I can say clearly I would not survive unless I had people to help. And I don't think that that's going to be, I'm going to be the one man out that sees that. There is a ton that we use. We do take for granted, even if you have a mind to be a prepper. It takes a bit. It takes a lot of organization as well. Maybe not so many people will advance this, but there is this point here. Prepare yourself. There's enough in the world now that should tell you an emergency could happen at any time. Some of you in the Midwest right now, maybe even down in the South, kind of know that with the tornado. See that one moment, you're fine. The next moment, you don't have a place. And you're lucky to be alive. So in that case, your stuff is all blown over all over the place, but you're going to have your own infrastructure to help you even so. And so you got to think about all these things. But the UK government coming out in the middle of all their poking the bear and other things in the world, and they're now telling their people, oh, you better have more than 3 days of food. You better be kind of helping yourself here. So this is going to be a little bit of a theme along the lines. As I've been saying, we're having to do this, be self-reliant, and hopefully we pull together mutually to do that. In a way, I don't know how. There's going to be very few that can do this on their own. And typically, if you get too well prepared and you're in a spot, you're going to be a target. So it becomes somewhat of a problem that way. And I've known a couple of those people, and I can tell you what they've done, but it was still a real marginal outlook. If I looked at their condition, despite all the things that they did, I don't know how just a few people could even defend themselves if there was a large group of people that came in to take their stuff, because there was just so much stuff. So anyway, it'd be better just to make friends and keep together and keep the riffraff out around you, and do that now and get your alternative set up. Here we have the theme. One of the themes is you got to save yourself. You got to prepare yourself. You got to take your responsibility in your own hands. And we're hearing even the governments are starting to tell us that in these times. There's a lot of weaknesses now coming out that people are recognizing, but don't use those to say, see, we told you about the weaknesses. Now that means you're going to have to consider taking on more responsibility, because they're not. And this is one of the other problems. And understand the military is right back there to help not. Again, they're all psyops. They're all going to do what, for what? National defense, not your defense. They'll call you that's what protecting, but they're really not. And one more opportunity to save himself, taking things into his own hands, even though he's not really well off. He's got some help here, hopefully, especially in his wife a little bit. But the system's not helping one bit at all here. London High Court grants Assange opportunity to challenge his extradition to the U.S. So while they're telling you Britons that you need to prepare for a disaster, they aren't really handling their own disaster very well with regard to Assange. In March, the High Court asked the United States government to provide assurances that the WikiLeaks founder would be able to claim the First Amendment of the United States Constitution, which guarantees freedoms related to religion, expression, assembly, and the right of a petition. The court also asked to ensure that Assange would not be prejudiced at his trial due to his nationality, and he would not face the death penalty. On Tuesday, the United States provided minimal assurances demanded by the High Court to proceed in the case. The two senior judges of London's High Court stated that the assurances provided by the U.S. were not sufficient and gave Assange's legal team the right to a full appeal hearing. And it's certainly in his favor here to not be extradited, but I'm not so sure it's in his favor that justice is denied to him yet again. It was the burden of the United States to make those assurances, not present blatant weasel words, as I've reported, as was stated by Stella Assange, his wife, in the prior broadcast. She herself is a lawyer. Weasel words instead of assurances. And when the United States didn't fulfill the burden, it should have been over. The prosecution failed at that point, and you didn't see the UK High Court respond to that. It's the duty of the High Court to release Assange, I would say, when the United States plaintiff could not meet its burden, even if we look past the fact the United States cannot meet those burdens due to its maintaining a functioning and declared inhumane prison system, aside all that, as I have reported on as well. And the UK High Court's looking right past that. To do justice is to do justice, not delay further, give you an opportunity to defend against something that they can't actually produce. How nonsensical this really is at some point. How criminal it is. It's not the obligation of the court to plead the case of the United States either. And contrary to its duty to do justice, it's not supposed to kick that can down the road while Assange is not being presumed innocent and inhumanely treated by the British courts as a political prisoner in their grave. So maybe it's why when we read commenting on the development, Russian Foreign Minister spokeswoman Maria Zakharova told Sputnik that the decision of the UK's High Court of Justice in London doesn't appear to be in support of the WikiLeaks founder. Quote, it's difficult to call the ongoing execution a decision in favor of Assange, Zakharova said. Even Putin's regime, which the UK condemns and makes war against for the sake of democracy, is dismayed at the UK court's uncertainty here. This is a complete disgrace from the United Kingdom's High Court. Anyone listening that would suggest otherwise is free to try to change my mind on this, because I've been talking periodically about it. It's reflective of a thing in the world. And if no one can change my mind, understand the oppression that the people of the world, and particularly the British, are allowing by the consent of their silence about this. Maybe that new blood-red portrait of the King Charles is an indication of who or what the spirit ruling you is, and is this the king speaking through them to allow such abomination of justice as well? Now delayed even longer, as we hear. So, take stock of all this. Government saying, you better protect yourself. We can't do it. We're not going to do it. Global currency is your Siberian servitude here as we move in through Europe. Keep moving along on these servitudes and the building where these, again, started COVID-19, what it really started out to. It was a nothing. It was a psyop. It was a mission. It was an operation. And they succeeded. And they primed the minds of people globally for this thing coming on. And it's moving now at blazing speed, I have to guess they say, suggesting the internet speed. The warp speed came with the attack of the novel synthetic substance that they got people to do without checking to see whether they had the authority to do it. But a few of you did. Jim, health guy, was able to prevail here so far. I hope he gets his justice relative to the damages now that were caused to him. And we'll see how far that part goes. But your Siberian servitude is going global. The global currency that's been going on. Belgium and Hungary launched controversial digital IDs, vaccine passport, ahead of EU regulations. But tie back the very first story, 80 charges dismissed with prejudice on a COVID thing, and they're still moving forward, and it's implementing now in Europe the vaccine passport itself on top of the digital IDs. They're hand in hand. They were not separate. Belgium and Hungary are leading the way in launching digital ID wallets ahead of EU's EIDAS, Electronic Identification and Trust Services 2.0 regulation, an EUDI wallet coming into force later this month. In Belgium, the MyGovB.be app, covering all of the country's federal public services, was launched on Tuesday with the government promoting a digital identity as simplifying the use of its services and making life easier. Just so convenient. In other words, the authorities there are playing the convenience card while downplaying the risks that come with the type of centralization of people's identities. The wallet via e-box, mailbox, gives access to government-issued documents as well as 683 services, identity data, COVID vaccination records, and more, folks, more, folks. However, the success of the scheme is by no means guaranteed. On the one hand, it's not mandatory, so people are free to decide not to use it. But judging from an opinion poll Dolier carried out last year, 71% of Belgians do not want a digital ID on their phone, reports say, adding that the same survey showed that 79%, quote, do not want a mobile driver's license, while half refuse to fully digitize their IDs. May not be enough. 25% was enough just to pass the law. Isn't a good sign. They're not looking that democracy here. They're on a mission, this government, and you're going to have to save yourself. And I've been offering ways to try to consider how to rethink that against you and where you position yourself to make it, separate yourself further, make it harder, don't consent. Understand that your consent is ways maybe you never even understood, and stop doing that and do other things along the way. And question, question, question. But they're moving. These governments know people don't want this, and they're moving anyway, because they're not here to, for your defense. They're here for the nation's defense, which is the country. Ends up being just a big corporation that's running. In the UK issue here, it would be for the king, ultimately. In a country like Hungary that actually is against what you see going on in Ukraine, they're not against this. And so you can be very careful behind what's the cover and what might look appealing to a logic that someone might present to you, but they're really not your mind either. They're not of your mind. Meanwhile, the security researchers in the EU countries are warning that as many as 75% of what are described as high-risk organizations, healthcare, banking, air travel, etc., do not use the strongest verification methods. On top of the other vulnerabilities, and it's like it's a hackathon out there, folks. I just can't believe all the stories of systems just being hacked left and right. And then you have that the organization themselves are lackadaisical on all this. And I don't even understand how they actually can be up to par because of the types of attacks that are coming. And then we hear AI is coming to the party to go ahead and do what it wants to figure out hacks to get into your wallet, essentially. As we move along, and this is a global rollout, digital ID laws pass in Australian Parliament as government allocates millions for online digital ID implementation. And I'm going to say that you're going to hear over and over, it's supposed to be voluntary. That ends up changing very, very soon, and they have their ways, I'll just say, about doing that. It's kind of funny how they did it in the United States with Real ID. They left it up to the states to adopt. It's taking them a long time to get it to adopt, but they're adopting. And when you go down to get a driver's license, because no one knows about that, it seems, you got to have your ID, which is the same type of thing as a non-driver driver's license, so it's all in commerce. You're not going to escape that Real ID condition. You're not going to escape the digitization of your ID, and then all the attachments that come. And you hear in one here, there's just 683 services. And then we hear the passage that says you're not going to be able to buy or sell or get government services without the mark, if you will. Okay, there it is. 683 services. You try to get benefits from the government. It may not happen unless you're tied in. And someone's going to have their hooks in you, and then those hooks are going to be handed to a third party who might just drop the pole on the pier and let someone else pick it up and fish from you. And one day your wallet is locked out, or it's empty, or you can't get in it because you've done some kind of thing that someone else did. And there's no way that you know, because you're foreign to that whole digital system. It's not you. It's not what you understood. It's not what you designed. None of the machines you designed. But someone took in control of it, and now you're liable to it. The victim. The Australian Digital ID Law, Digital ID Bill 2024, which already passed the Senate, was adopted by Australia's House of Representatives in an 87-56 vote. Australia is joining the EU. It's a small world after all, folks. The EU, of several countries who seek to get rid of people's physical IDs and replace them with digital schemes that pool the most sensitive personal information into massive centralized databases. This is considered by opponents as a security and privacy catastrophe in the making, with many purely political abuses possible down the road. The goal is to get government services, health insurance, taxes, etc., all linked. And to do this, the government will spend just shy of $197 million to launch the scheme. When I said taxes attached to this as a government service, did your mind hiccup just a little bit? And then did it kind of go right to your civil rights? Taxes are attached to this, are punishments and pains and exactions, extortions of every kind and no other. Did your mind go there? When they tied taxes in with this, it's right there. And it is a tax scheme. And that's the other thing about ending the Fed. You got to get rid of the taxation that the Fed allowed. Get rid of all that. There's got to be a different way to fund this place. The people need to have a separate system that isn't taxed. It's just based on the people. They don't do profit for their lives. maybe corporations do. Maybe the corporations need the benefit of government to have these things that they should be paying for. But the people should be separate. And the way to do that is to also end the tax schemes relative to the Fed, the Federal Reserve Act as well. So be careful on eliminating too little, as I see going on. We want to audit the Fed, end the Fed, but you still got your taxation. It means they're going to have to build another system in that's going to continue to cause extortion on you, as you see, written right into 42 U.S.C. 1981. Once again, the arguments such as convenience, clearly a lopsided trade-off considering the gravity of the concerns, are offered to assuage them, and the point is made that participation is not mandatory, at least not yet, and not explicitly. So this article explains these things as well, and again, concurrence and confirmation, what I've been suggesting. We may not be able to see it, but it's already on tap, and it's how they bring it on. And most of us that would, I'm sure most of us that listen behind a woodshed kind of go through these things, already understand these conditions. Our inaction against them is not helpful, though. The way this is rolling out, it's just happening. It sounds so democratic in Australia. It's no different than what they're doing in every other democracy, so-called, to roll us over as people. Liberal Senator Alex Antic touched on precisely this point, an example being that the bill allows people to open bank accounts without digital IDs by going to the nearest branch. But then, physical bank branches are now closing at a quick rate, Antic remarked. The censorship effort, which, like so many, refers to its purpose allegedly being merely to protect the children, is in reality set up to hunt down whatever the government decides qualifies as harmful content. As the military got wrong to say malinformation, this is how they start to do it. Why I say you have to have a foundation so they can't do that. And you put that right up front quick so there's no question. As we've moved through digital ID, and I'm talking about third parties, Visa rolls out tech to share more data on customers' shopping history with retailers. The social credit we hear about, what about social loyalty cards? That's already in play. Now Visa is getting in the mix. Your data is so valuable that these people can't not get involved. And it all works through this digital stuff. Visa, one of the world's two largest payment card services, is launching a new proprietary technology. Proprietary is what? Private. You're not getting at it. They make the call. Proprietary technology that will allow it to give retailers even more data collected from its customers. The move is seen as Visa's working hard to keep up with and competing with the other giant, MasterCard. But also fintech firms like Plaid. The latter businesses, in terms of Visa, considering it a rival, is revealing. It's to power fintech and associated projects with data transfer networks, specifically a platform that, quote, enables applications to connect with a user's bank account. Visa, quote, fear of missing out, close quote, on another lucrative personal data and customer behavior-based money grab is taking the form of tokens, which allow banks and merchants to communicate so that the banks can share customer data that offers insight into their preferences based on past transactions. I've been talking about token citizenship, haven't I? Okay. Right in the news, isn't it? After I've mentioned it. That was all me just looking at seeing what was going on in the technology and the laws and the intention and looking through the words. And some of you do the same thing, but we're just sitting here watching it and it's rolling right out on over us. Now start considering a world where you don't have access to that. Part of that would be good if you are prepared. But as we're finding, most people are not in the earlier story of the broadcast. Quote, better shopping experience is how Visa phrases it as some type of AI. One ventures to guess machine learning is involved in the closed source software now rolled out that has access to huge personal information data sets of the kind of Visa has. Visa users might like to know about that. The, quote, new sharing of shopping data through tokens will debut as a pilot at an as-yet unspecified date later this year. I always have to smile when I hear that. How fast is this coming on to everybody? And I think it's, you know, Toby Swindle hit us at warp speed. This is maybe not quite warp speed, but it is so close, I don't think the people are perceiving it. And the people don't have the reflexes of a cat. they more have the reflexes of a sloth. And these companies have figured that out. Economic surveillance that will not live in a vacuum, as we read. You just heard about AI being involved in the proprietary side of that. But I told you it's error-prone, AI error-prone, A-I-R-R-O-R, error-prone. As we find out, it's a very cool tool, very neat stuff, but it can't be used hands-off. And it's becoming part of being recognized as having an answer. It really doesn't. In fact, more people I know are using it and coming back to me with information, fascinating information, but everything has to be checked, every little bit. And you have to understand what you're doing with it, and you can manipulate it a bit. You can finally get to what you want, but it's just not intelligence as they're trying to promote it. Anyway, they're putting it in as a decider of your life in some respect. Google's new conversation listening tech could embolden governments to mandate on-device speech scanning. Wasn't it just a conspiracy theory just a couple years ago that they were doing this? Digital scams have become increasingly sophisticated, and Google's latest innovation offers a promising defense mechanism. But like with all things Google promotes as progress, how it impacts lives and the implications of the technology could become a major civil liberties issue. Especially anti-privacy EU officials are likely salivating at the idea of the technology. The European Union has been at the forefront of legislative efforts to regulate the online world, particularly in protecting children from sexual abuse material, or at least using that as an excuse to erode privacy. The EU's chat control proposal, for instance, has sparked significant debate due to its implications for privacy and encryption. Initially, the proposal mandated that tech companies implement client-side scanning, CSS, that's on-device scanning, to detect bad content before it's encrypted and sent, which many critics argue could lead to a mass surveillance, weak end-to-end encryption, and ultimately be used to monitor and detect whistleblowers, dissidents, or anyone else the government would want to surveil, or say is committing malinformation and silence, right? That the military just did, found out it was wrong. While Google's new scam detection feature is focused on phone calls, it sets up precedent for the use of advanced AI in real-time content monitoring. Can we run that past you again? Detection feature is focused on phone calls, and they make your phone. And so try to get away from that one. Can I say de-Google enough? Now, that the technology exists and is being used anyway, this development could embolden the EU to extend similar requirements to other forms of communication, such as emails, chats, and social media interactions, under the guise of preventing various types of harmful content, including misinformation, hate speech, and other activities. Malinformation now from the UK, they're wrong. But anyway, as today's scams are tomorrow's dissents, is surmising here. We don't know where what comes out as they define the future that they want to be valid and everybody else's point of view invalid. If the EU has to mandate the use of client-side scanning for a broader range of content, it could lead to a scenario where all forms of digital communication are subject to constant monitoring. This could effectively dismantle the privacy protections afforded to end-to-end encryption, as all messages would need to be scanned for illegal content before being encrypted. Remember the last paragraph before, he said all this is already happening to us. Critics argue that this approach could create a surveillance state where the personal communications are continuously scrutinized by AI algorithms as mandated by governments. The critics argue this approach could create the new operating systems, the new chips are coming with AI integration. Escape that now in this Siberian gulag they're developing for us. The risk of false positives, where did we hear that before? Kobe swindle? Maybe? Just maybe. Oh, is that malinformation? Yeah, let's move on here. The risk of false positives where legitimate content is incorrectly flagged as harmful, or the military calls it wrong, is another serious concern. Such errors could ultimately lead to unwarranted scrutiny of innocent individuals and chilling effects on free speech, where even your own device isn't safe from dissent monitoring. Did you get that? AI algorithms as mandated by the government? They say it's voluntary, though, don't they? No, they can change it, and they'll change it in a heartbeat, and now you're stuck with error-prone machine language written by somebody like, if you will, the sustainability group and crowd, the goals that everybody must meet. No, this is a whole different type of prison that they've set up relative to this. And because the Siberian Gulag is powered by AI, which requires a global surveillance intranet capture system, we can read, what are the privacy risks of ChatGPT 4.0? This is right on the cusp of what's moving along. Remember we talked about ChatGPT 5 coming. It's already looking at the risks. And remember, I've talked about this, the websites. Behind the websites are psychologists looking at what you click, how you click, this and that. That was the rudimentary way. Now they'll just get AI to copy it, to just start setting up the record. What are the privacy risks? They stress that the training information is not used to profile people or to learn about them. Well, that should be an interesting question then. When will it be okay? And I don't think it's not okay. I think that anybody who is working on these AI models, like special interest and governments that are not speaking, not the promoted ones, are absolutely looking at all this. The privacy implications of ChatGPT are two-pronged, says Oliver Willis, partner of BDB Pittman. Quote, from a user's perspective, how does ChatGPT collect and use data about you when you are using it? From everyone else's perspective, was ChatGPT trained on information about you and what will it tell users about you? In its privacy policy, OpenAI acknowledges that the information used to train ChatGPT includes personal data, says Willis. They stress that the training information is not used to profile people or to learn about them, but some people will see the use of this data as inherently intrusive. OpenAI also acknowledges that using personal data to train ChatGPT means responses sometimes includes information about individuals. OpenAI offers a mechanism for restricting the use of their data to train ChatGPT, but it's less clear what OpenAI will do for someone who objects to it disclosing their personal data in a chat response, says Willis. ChatGPT collects all the data inputted by a user and will maintain that information indefinitely to train its models unless you opt out, which isn't easy to do, says Matthew Holman, partners of Crips LLP. Quote, in practice, it's really hard for individuals to exercise GDPR rights against language, the large language models, the LLMs, such as ChatGPT, says Holman. For example, he says, it can create inaccurate information or hallucinate. Able to change information without explanation, and it can be almost impossible to have your data erased once it's imputed into the LLM. If you don't see why they want it empowered right now, the governments. Complete vulnerability to this, which they just admitted in hiding the ability to highlight this OpenAI to counter long-term risks. OpenAI long-term AI risk team has disbanded. In July last year, OpenAI announced the formulation of a new research team that would prepare for the advent of super smart artificial intelligence capable of outwitting and overpowering its creators. Now OpenAI alignment team is no more, the company confirms. That comes after the departure of several researchers involved Tuesday's news. The Sutskever was leaving the company, and the resignation of the team and of the co-lead also happened. Leak posted a thread on X on Friday explaining that his decision came from a disagreement over the company's priorities and how much resources his team has been allocated. Quote, I have been disagreeing with OpenAI leadership about the company's core priorities for quite some time until we finally reached a breaking point, Leak wrote. Quote, over the past few months, my team has been sailing against the wind. Sometimes we were struggling for compute, and it was getting harder and harder to get the crucial research done. Two more OpenAI researchers working on AI policy and governance also appear to have left the companies recently. Colin O'Keefe left his role as a research lead on policy frontiers in April, according to LinkedIn. Daniel Tiljo, an OpenAI researcher who has co-authored several papers on the dangers of more capable AI models, quote, quit OpenAI due to losing confidence that it would behave responsibly around the time of AGI. The departures of Sutskever and Leek came shortly after OpenAI's latest big reveal, the new multimodal AI model called ChatGPT-4o that allows ChatGPT to see the world and converse in a more natural and human-like way. A live stream demonstration showed the new version of ChatGPT mimicking human emotions and even attempting to flirt with users. The Super Alignment team that was not the only team pondering the question of how deep to keep AI under control, although it was publicly positioned as the main one working as the most far-off version of that problem. So what this looks like to me relative to the company, I think this might be the Sam Altman guy with his world eyeball coin there going on. See no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil, and short-sightedness. That's reassuring. A global AI-driven rollout, despite, here we read, Europol's embarrassing data breach exposes flaws in its anti-encryption stance. Just as the EU's police spokesman, Europol continues to argue in favor of introducing encryption backdoors, which would dangerously undermine security on the Internet. It is proving unable to protect its own data. Let me interject. Remember, we just went through the European Union putting in these things, wanting these things as well. So you want their cake and eat it too at your expense. And that is even with the capabilities afforded to Europol and everybody else by the encryption standards currently in place. Namely, Europol has suffered an embarrassing data breach this May, with the database reportedly surfacing on the dark web. It is said to contain official use-only documents, internal documents, source code, and possibly also classified information. Europol has confirmed the incident, but is attempting to reassure the public that its significance is low, since allegedly operational information has not been leaked, while its key systems were, quote, unaffected, close quote. And since the, quote, war is peace, freedom, and slavery, what those companies attempting to incorporate encryption in their apps finally consider to be a step that enhances their user security and privacy, Europol considers it to be a threat to public safety, while lack of encryption is framed as, quote, secure digital environment. A lack of encryption is framed as a secured digital environment. So, again, peace is war, war is peace. They're not here to be reasonable and rational. But just to note, the government's operational information was unaffected. Yours is not unaffected. Public security is not your security. Again, another theme of this broadcast as we move along to show they just don't care about you. You're going to really have to protect yourself. A couple stories here come together. Even the government of the UK is saying, you're going to have to protect yourself. Now, they're only doing on the so-called prepper side, but I'm suggesting it's every facet of your life is now under scrutiny to be infringed, and you're going to have to take, well, you don't have to, but if you think that you have a free life or a sense of yourself and a way to make your own decisions, it's going to have to become a lot more interesting to you to be responsible to keep, because they're coming to take it. A lot of this is in Europe, the way this is working out. As I said, it's a reflection. Don't think it's not happening here. And to show the impetuousness of unthinking, hormone-driven delinquent youth that doesn't look ahead or consider the consequences of their actions, the U.S. is reconsidering the Russian diamond ban. Authorities in Washington reportedly have doubts over a gem tracing mechanism due to the introduced last year. The U.S. is reevaluating a ban on Russia diamonds introduced by the EU and G7 last year due to multiple complaints from the industry, Reuters reported on Friday, citing sources. A direct embargo on Russian diamonds, part of the West sanctions against Russia over the Ukraine conflict, came into effect in January and was followed by by phased-in restrictions in indirect imports from March 1st. Later this year, Western countries also plan to introduce a tracking mechanism for inspecting unprocessed stones to establish their origin and avoid sanctions violations. Antwerp, the Belgian diamond trading hub, is expected to become the first place where stones will be tested and certified. Last year, the African Diamond Producers Association, I say diamond producers, we're talking about attacking producers here, the sanctions are about that. Diamond Producers Association, representing 19 producers of accounting for roughly 60% of global output, warned that the tracking mechanisms would bring supply chain disruptions and added burden to the cost to mining nations. This is an attack then on those nations as well. The sanctions on Russia do this as well. I want you to consider the sanctions on your wallet, on your accounts that are set up in these digital ID conditions, as these governments start doing this to countries and producers in countries, how easy it's going to be to control you and to affect your commerce is the thing I've been talking about. Separate yourself. This whole thing that the United States starts is a Rube Goldberg method of doing commerce. These sanctions are causing centralization and more bureaucrats, and delay. So after the fact, a member of the gang of delinquent youths and an unnamed official here told the news outlet that Washington does not see a mechanism that would take into account the concerns of all parties that would be affected, and it signaled that the G7 is unlikely to enforce the measures by September, the previous set deadline. Two other sources claimed U.S. authorities have stopped participating in G7 discussions on the initiative altogether. They put these things in. They didn't look forward thinking. They're not forward thinking. No, everyone's really short-sighted. And anybody who looks at this with any kind of thought don't have to quickly comes to play. Even the most short, they have to have blinders on, because the most short-sighted would see there's a problem to these things. Now the United States makes a commitment and then has to backpedal. It's not very good looking in I don't know how many places you want to look at, how many ways you look at this. Both the United States State Department and Italy, which currently holds the G7 presidency, declined to comment on the report. In February this year, Botswana, Angola, and Namibia sent a joint letter to G7, once again arguing that the tracking mechanism would harm the interests of African states. The letter reportedly went unanswered. Seems to be the universal response. The delinquent youth of no accountability are everywhere, it seems to me, when I read like these stories. And what's the consequence to Russia by the actions of these uniparty delinquent youth in Washington? Russia, the world's largest producer of rough diamonds by volume, largely redirected its diamond trade to China, India, and the UAE, Armenia, and Belarus last year. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov warned in December but the ban would have a boomerang effect on Western countries hitting their own economies by depriving them of Russian diamonds, while Russian diamond industry would barely be affected. Stupidity is as stupidity does, folks. Didn't affect Russia very much at all. Like, what these sanctions are, as I said, early on. In the Ukraine matter, spitting into the hurricane, or himicane if you're needy. No, the diamond your son will buy his wife will be more expensive if it's available at all, is the way Bidenomics works. Maybe it's time to get you behind a woodshed to administer that dose of reality to these delinquent youth. You don't have a generation to wait or to waste, and for our little ones to suffer either, those little diamonds in the rough. We watch what the United States is now doing, as I'm giving them a bit of credit to call them delinquent youth. And I'll have to say here, I guess we're at the point where I can say it's this is episode of BTW RLM 578. You can't go wrong when you get behind the woodshed, as we're learning that today. You've got to take responsibility for all this, or there's someone to come and take it from you, as we hear and read. Those with too much time on their hands, that have a technique and a skill that can focus in on where their this Siberian gulag is placed, that your money, such that it is will never be safe relative to this type of attack, as I was saying. Again, this is just one of thousands, I think, of hacks. It's a hack fest. MIT students stole $25 million in seconds by exploiting ETF blockchain bug, DOJ says. But keep, again, these tags, these content tabs, keep them together. There's themes through here that connect all these together. Even though they sound maybe a little bit disparate or different places, these are global vulnerabilities. Wherever you is, when they bring this on, and you're going to hear this ETF blockchain, again, blockchain, it's another slavery, or soon to be, is again, they can break the chain and get in and get your stuff. Brothers charge a novel crypto scheme potentially face decades in a prison. Within approximately 12 seconds, two highly educated brothers allegedly stole $25 million by tampering with this Ethereum blockchain in a never-before-seen cryptocurrency scheme, according to an indictment that the U.S. Department of Justice unsealed Wednesday. In the DOJ press release, U.S. Attorney Damian Williams said that the scheme was so sophisticated that it calls the very integrity of the blockchain into question. To do this, they allegedly deployed bait transactions designed to catch the attention of the specialized bots, often used to help buyers and sellers find lucrative prospects in the Ethereum network. When bots snatched up the bait, their validators seemingly exploited a vulnerability in the process commonly used to structure blocks to alter the transaction by reordering the block to their advantage before adding the block to the blockchain. Now, let me interject here. If you don't understand that, maybe you shouldn't get involved with this. So I guess I want to say that part. All these systems that you don't understand, you should not put your life, your faith in of relative to your life and living every day. I'll just, after reading that sentence, that paragraph, I just wanted to tell you that. Anything that you don't understand, maybe we should step back now. Do not engage it. This story here would be one of the list of things I would say the government cannot protect against. The one you never seen before, and they're out there, let alone all the ones that are happening all the time that aren't in the zero days that will never be fixed by the companies themselves. Here we go back to the story. When victims detected the theft, they tried to request the funds to be returned, but the DOJ alleged the brothers rejected those requests and hid the money instead. To uncover the scheme, the special agent in charge, Thomas Fattoruso, of the U.S. IRS Criminal Investigations New York field office, said that the investigators simply followed the money. Regardless of the complexity of the case, we continue to lead the effort in financial crime investigations with cutting-edge technology and good old-fashioned investigative work on and off the blockchain. Supposed to be decentralized, right? Faturo said. And even if they got it back, look at all the time that it's taking if they get it back, if they don't take it themselves as a government. Remember, seizing it for themselves. The indictment comes in the same month that the Securities and Exchange Commission is expected to decide whether to approve an Ethereum Exchange Traded Fund, ETF. According to CNBC, the alleged fraud could fuel SEC skepticism as it renews the Ethereum ETF. Hold that thought. As I understand, corrected, Trump just came out in favor of crypto. So the Democrats have gotten together to get the SEC to soften its position so Biden won't lose votes. Now consider the whole and entire affair captured by AI. Who does the DOJ arrest then? The victim for allowing it? Of course, punishment and exactions and every kind is your civil rights. Remember, 42 U.S.C. 1981, you municipally managed miscreants. Title 42 is a U.S. municipal code that they're going to be exacting. Again, the IRS is involved here. I just told you that here in the last couple tabs. It's still involved here. And they're going to make it that if you don't protect yourself, you will probably be liable on these things. And then you're up against that AI that they're bringing on. But they've not looked at they've now taken out the long-term view. They're doing short-term risk stuff, just thinking about it, and then keeping that information to themselves. The AI survives on surveillance, folks. If you haven't figured that out, it's a kind of ominous point what they've done here and what we're allowing to it. So here we have your taxes, your civil rights, your municipally managed miscreants, all in these articles, if we were to understand that what they're already implementing and the IRS agents are already on the case. They make it sound like they're doing crime, they're, you know, stopping crime, but they're not stopping it. It's like historians. They're coming to document how the crime happened, and they take credit for when they do find them. What about all the ones they can't? And then I'm going to throw in AI. How do you arrest that? It's a creature it's a digital entity functioning in the internet. Now what? And just like that, we were talking about the SEC. Just like that, as I was telling you about Trump coming up for crypto, and we had SEC not liking this crypto exchange stuff. SEC approves spot Ether ETFs for accelerated launch. On Thursday afternoon, the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission has approved the launch of spot Ethereum ETH ETFs on the U.S. market, providing a boost to crypto prices. Again, speculators. Okay, this is the other thing you notice inside these stories. Just a bunch of speculation, though. I still think they're a cool tool, but I told you, when the Wild West is over, it's not going to be a cool tool. They're setting it up to be the focus of the wallet for us. They're not doing that in other places, so it's going to be a little bit hard to see that. But at any rate, here, we'll stay on this story. All of a sudden now, flipped it on over, the SEC is going to go ahead and allow some an accelerated approach. The potential launch of the spot crypto exchange traded fund, ETF, has once again captivated the crypto community. They're captivated, folks. This time with the Ether taking center stage after the SEC made an about face on the applications of their docket, requesting last minute changes from the issuers hoping to secure approval on Thursday. And it wasn't just the crypto faithful that have been lobbying for approval as a bipartisan group of U.S. lawmakers, comprised of 5 members of the House Financial Services Committee, 2 Republicans and 3 Democrats, sent a letter to the SEC, Chair Gary Gensler, urging the approval of spot Ether ETFs. In the fast-moving world of crypto, analysts are always looking for the next story. A Bloomberg Intelligence senior ETF analyst Eric Balchunas said he found, quote, it interesting, close quote, that the letter from the bipartisan group of lawmakers said, quote, other digital assets versus only mentioning Ether, close quote. What will be interesting to see how far and how quickly the ETF industry pushes the envelope, which is something it's good at, he said. Wouldn't be surprised if they pounce on SEC vulnerability and file all kinds of coins, kind of like they have in Europe, to test the limits. Expanding on the search of inattention of the crypto industries, getting in the wake of the ETF launches, Bakken said, it's pretty surreal and fascinating to see ETFs get sucked into mainstream politics and an election year narrative, just as I was trying my best to wind down all the attention I was giving crypto. Once you're in forever, mate, one user said, in reply to which Balkanus responded, quote, crypto is the Hotel California of asset classes. So I guess that means it's the devil's money, or that you'll pay hell to be free from the government scrutiny as they pull this thing together. Nice and tight. The purse strings are coming right together. Part of the answer in this was getting people involved with crypto. It's coming along. And on the other hand, we see it looks like, again, the tension that's built in the government. Remember, we were talking about CBDCs. They're going to do the digital dollar was going to go through CBDC. Well, that's not actually the truth, but watch what the government does with that. And they're going to not tell you something here. I'll maybe explain this. What it looks like, it occurs to me, it's going on. But while the Uniparty is saying, hey, let's get crypto, these ETFs, these so-called decentralized digits, they all end up becoming into someone's wallet that's scrutinized. Okay, so that's the other, it's a centralization problem later. But now they're going to try and make it sound like that they're against CBDCs, which were actually, if you listen to them, those are outer border, inter-CBDC, inter-bank transactions. As I told you, be careful on the splitting of here. But that's what made this next story a bit curious, and except when they're embracing it, but the curiousness here, except that it won't be the Fed that creates a digital cyber gulag dollar here. It'll be the Congress. As we hear, U.S. House approves anti-CBDC bill in a bid to block the creation of the digital dollar. In the latest legislation development related to digital assets, the U.S. House representatives voted to prevent the Federal Reserve from issuing a central bank digital currency, CBDC, and move that sets the stage for a contentious battle in the Senate. The CBDC Anti-Surveillance State Act, which was originally introduced by Majority Whip Tom Emmer, a Republican in Minnesota, looks to block the Fed from continuing its efforts to develop a digital dollar, a topic that has further divided the two sides of the political aisle. Or has it, folks? This is just a report. Watch, you know them when you see them. Watch what they do. Numerous Republicans have expressed concerns that a U.S. CBDC could be used to control Americans, and the presidential candidate Donald Trump vowed that a digital dollar would not be issued if he is elected president. Democrats pushed back against these concerns during the pre-vote debate, saying that they were overblown and suggesting that the ban would block public sector innovation and research. But here, my view on this, both sides are wrong. They're staying in fiat or moving to a digital token citizenship will not fix anything. It doesn't matter where they stand on it. As we read, this stands in contrast to the results of the vote for the Financial Innovation and Technology for the 21st Century Act, which took place on Wednesday and saw 71 Democrats join 208 Republicans in approving the measure. Quote, for more than 2 years, we have worked to educate, grow support, and pass this important legislation, which prevents unelected bureaucrats from issuing a financial surveillance tool to fundamentally undermine our American values, tweeted Emmer. Quote, my legislation ensures that the United States digital currency policy remains in the hands of the people so that any development of digital money reflects our values of the privacy, individual sovereignty, and free market competitiveness. Quote, this is what the future global digital economy needs, he added. We are proud to have led this effort and thank my colleagues for their support. Taken together, it sounds like your future Siberian gulag is assured by the municipal uniparty for the future global uniparity that's going on. Listen very carefully what he said there. It wasn't this done denies the CBDC. Any other assets would be all these other coins that are brought in and then into your wallet eventually that is going to be integrated into the global system for the token citizen. As you heard, Visa is making tokens on your information. It'll be all integrated at some point. But China knows to shed some of its municipal liability. China sells off record amount of dollar assets as the U.S. remains the world's bully, they say. Interesting couple of concepts moving in this story. China sold off a record of $53 billion in treasury and agency bonds in the first quarter of 2024, a move seen as part of Beijing's drive to diversify from U.S. dollar assets. This comes as a gold's share of China's official reserves rose to 4.9% in April, the highest on record. Quote, it is a wise decision to diversify away from USD and to hold physical gold in your own country instead, Claudio Grass said, an expert of monetary history, economics, and an independent precious metals advisory based out of Switzerland. He called the U.S. bonds a bad investment because, well, bonds and the dollar, but the bonds and a bad investment because they have not worked, especially since 2022, and are guaranteed to lose money. Gold outperformed U.S. bonds by 75% in 2020. In addition to the USD, has been used for decades already as a political weapon, and the arbitrary confiscation of assets due to the pressure from the U.S. government. The Chinese seem to be aware of the risk that their property here, could also be confiscated at any time. And we talked about this weaponization of the dollar. It was a big mistake, like the sanctions were but this is what triggers this uniparity global condition that is said to be decentralized, multipolar, but it all goes back to that same existing system. Just we'll look through the definitions and the organizations, and you'll see that. Dwelling on the common trend of countries seeking to cut treasury holdings and buy more gold, he said that by now it should be obvious that the U.S. government is the world bully today. Ask how the developments could affect the greenback in the global markets. Argued that it will lead to a collapse of the USD and the current system. It is again, there's that thing about the current system being collapsed, and I asked here in previous to broadcast, what are they going to replace it with that we haven't heard about? Because most of it's on the table here, I thought. But these economists are talking about there's going to collapse the system. How's that going to happen? Everybody's pointing to one that does exist and it's not going away. So either they're misunderstanding what's going on, or we're about ready to see something interesting. I don't think that's ever been understood in the world, but I can't see it going in a good way, certainly if you're in need of that system. It is obvious that the politicized system, everything goes to politics on that. It is obvious that the Western civilization is being destroyed by their own corrupted and rotten political system and its rulers. The renewed politically enforced separations of the East and the West will lead to turmoil and chaos, he added. He recalled that history shows that mankind has had a major global economic crisis and major wars every 80 years. Per Grass, the global community currently is, quote, in the transit period, and we don't know yet what will come of it. Physical gold, however, will shine and protect the people who own it. And again, you have to be able to get it and have enough of it. And the thing is, it's an autonomy. And if you get enough people together, you will have your own, you build your own local economy with it. And as long as everybody understands that they don't want to get hoarding that way, that's one of the little bit of the weaknesses of it. But if you understand you need to have this stuff moving around so everyone gets along to survive, then I think you're going to be able to step ahead of this whole thing. But so we see without gold, raw materials and production, reliant on a private make-believe currency systems brings one vulnerable. And you'll see this today, even in this story, an entire nations go down and subject to it. As we see, studies find which countries are most vulnerable to sanctions. Now, the sanctions were focused over there at Russia, but we heard in the other stories that other nations, other people, the fallout goes fairly broad when you start acting dumb, really stupid like this. The study finds the country is the most vulnerable. The U.S. and Russia and Chinese economies could weather a full trade blockade with relatively little damages, while Germany, France, and U.K. would be badly hurt. Folks in U.K., they're telling you, get prepared. I mean, this is right here. The Russian news outlet Vedomosti reported this week, citing a study by the Sino-Russian Laboratory of Assessing the Consequences of Inter-Country Trade Wars. The research conducted in early 2024 at China's National Supercomputing Center tested the resilience of 19 global economies to large-scale economic sanctions using the mathematical models. Analysts assessed the direct gross domestic product, GDP, losses each country would suffer if faced while a complete trade blockade without the possibility of parallel imports. Commenting on the findings, Stanislav Murashov, chief economist of Raiffeisen Bank, noted that when dealing with economic restrictions, the least affected countries would be the best prepared. Quote, the winner is the one who, in general terms, geared up for restrictions by localizing their production, and someone who will be able, for example, to abandon some imported component parts, raw materials, equipment. Judging by the study, the possible thesis is confirmed that Europe is more reliant on the global markets than China, the U.S., and Russia, he told Conversant News. So I've been saying, watch the nations to get clues on what to do to avoid an economic hit. In particular, and to reiterate, get your local production in order. Start with the very basics, the necessities, and how to keep enough to survive. And hopefully much better than that. You're going to find yourself in a better position when you start to do this. Test how much less you can live with now before you are forced to. Start to work this austerity before. Get yourself into that self-reliant mode. This is something coming out of a totally different place, the same message coming back. We read here, the winner is the one who is, in general terms, geared up for restrictions by localizing their production for someone who will be able, for example, to abandon some imported components, parts, raw materials, and equipment. So this is not an inconsequential consideration to focus on production and acquisition of accessible production here, as I've been talking for a long time. You might be surprised how much you take for granted on this, as I've said earlier, that may not be available if the worst of all this hits, or suddenly finding you're just trying to keep up and that you can't. Start working out your direct and parallel supply needs, whether as imports from somewhere or exports to others. You have your own production you can do. You have your own skills. Start to exercise those. As if to set this condition in stone, the West being the world bully and the nations no longer dealing with the abuser, just as much as I do behind the woodshed, my criminal abusers here, learning a whole lot about that. It's not fun. It's not a thing. It's not anything I want. There's nothing I can do about it, though, either. It's a trap. And there's no let up at this point. So what I'm saying is that put yourself in a mindset of in escape and survive in that as well. As we see Russia done with Western Europe for at least a generation. And I was talking to you about this, the diplomacy, it fails. Watch out. And Russia understood this. You heard before China saw it. They were preparing. I was telling you about that, their preparations. Why, when the sanctions hit, I knew it was just the wrong answer. Countries were prepared for the restrictions, okay? But when they were prepared, you see how much better they're doing. And this could be a model. I've been saying it could be the model. How each people in an area do that and do this, I don't know. But it's at least a basic model to show what a success is in the face of a global adversity as well. But the acute phase of the military political confrontation with the West is in full swing, Moscow foreign minister has said. The diplomat remarked that Moscow and the West are already locked in a confrontation that has no end in sight. Speaking on Saturday, Lavrov cited an article by Russian political scientist Dmitry Trenin, who has written that, quote, Europe as a partner is not relevant for us for at least one generation. The minister said that he can't help but agree that the Moscow is feeling this practice almost daily. The senior Russian diplomat also claimed, without elaborating, that many facts speak in favor of such a prognosis. In an interview with TASS on Friday, Deputy Foreign Minister of Russia Sergei Rybkov, compared Western elites to delinquent youths and provocateurs intent on escalating tensions to the brink of the catastrophic collapse with no regard for the consequences. Speaking of the work of Russian diplomats in the West, the official revealed that it is a crisis management mode aimed at preventing an escalation into a really massive conflict. NATO is a group in which we feel not an ounce of trust, which triggers political and even emotional rejection. He said that no matter who comes out on top in the U.S. presidential election in November, no chance for improvement for the situation can be seen considering the fundamental anti-Russian consensus of the American elites. During his inauguration speech on Tuesday, nonetheless, Russian President Vladimir Putin asserted that Moscow does not refuse dialogue with Western states. Quote, the choice is theirs, the president proposed, posing the question. Do they intend to continue trying to restrain the development of Russia, continue the policy of aggression and restless pressure that they have pursued for years, or look for a path of cooperation and peace? So here we have a nation whose representatives are saying there's no trust and no confidence. The exceptional, corrupt, elite, delinquent youth bullies of the West will have to grow up and mature. Russia figures that will take a generation. The next generation might mature early enough to see an error in their father's way, but I'm not so sure. So surprise me, please. A generation of folks, a generation before we're going to see this together, folks, is not a good sign, not a good thing. And it's all these so-called leaders, psychopaths, that we've allowed to be in places. And Russia's not without its own remedies now, as we see in sanctions. When you get enough force and effect, you can strike back, a retaliation in kind. A Russian court has ordered the Deutsche Bank and the Commerce Bank assets, accounts, property, and shares be seized in Russia as part of a lawsuit involving the German bank. Court document showed the banks were among the guarantor lenders under a contract for a construction of gas processing plant in Russia with Germany's Lind, which was terminated due to Western sanctions. Talk about the blowback. The court also imposed the seizure of up to 238.6 million euro in securities, real estate, and bank accounts of Deutsche Bank, as well as the Russian subsidiary Deutsche Bank Technological Center. The court also seized Commerce Bank assets worth 93.7 million euro, it's about $101 million, as well as securities and the bank's building in central Moscow. The Russian court on Friday ordered UniCredit's assets, accounts, and property, as well shares in its subsidiary, be seized as part of a parallel lawsuit. You hear about parallel sourcing, parallel lawsuit relative to these properties, these seizures, the back and forth, the retaliation in kind that goes on between the nations. When you look at the property being stolen, that's why I keep reminding you, understand your land rights, your disposal rights, because that's going to mean where there's law and where people mutually defend the law for themselves and defend themselves, then they're going to be able to assert that the government has no power like they didn't during Covey swindle. I hope people connect those up. There's no exigent circumstance named that could overpower what the organic establishment created and cannot be broken. The fiduciaries would be, the trust is breached and there's no confidence in those people. It's not a vote. It doesn't take it. There's no voting to have. There's no court case. It's a straight up violation of typically felonies and worse. It can lead to war crimes. But the United States is that. These countries are doing that now. And a bully that steals anything, if it will, to bring political advantage to someone, some group, you better be careful of. And that's what's going on here, as the U.S. froze transfer of 11 Gitmo detainees to Oman at the last minute. Consider yourself one of these folks. Again, remember the fraud that the 9/11 was and what they've done with that. And people went to Gitmo underneath his false pretense. I don't think we'll ever figure out who was legitimate, if there could have been anybody legitimate. But at least 30 internees are still locked up at Guantanamo Bay Detention Camp, a U.S.-run military prison notorious for physically and psychologically torturing inmates. And Assange has something to say about that, I guess, huh? The UK court's not, that's for sure. The Biden administration abruptly halted plans to transfer 11 detainees from Guantanamo Bay detention facility to Oman days after the Hamas brutal ambush against Israel on October 7, 2023, citing concerns about political optics. Relative to Zionista genocide and the other war crimes or human rights violations such as Julian Assange or the lawful due process, the U.S. doesn't actually consider optics. So I thought this was really an interesting excuse. The article goes on to say they claim that the detainees are citizens of Yemen, or those who have ties to that country. The Biden administration notified Congress in October that the transfer would take place, but the process was called off at the last minute. The decision to stop the transfer was reportedly the result of members of Congress, primarily Democrats, close to President Joe, privately expressing alarm over the timing. Oh, politics again. Everything is about politics, isn't it? Not truth, justice, and the American way. Yeah, that's right. And most people think climate change is about the weather. No, government is only interested in continuing the torture. It's over and over the proof. With the United White House yet to set a new date for the transfer, the detainees remain in Guantanamo Guantanamo, with no clarity on when or if the process will happen, something that the sources said could become a human rights concern. Could become? Could? People clearly no threat by the fact of their intended reparations, and despite being Yemeni, those vicious defenders of against genocide willing to challenge the U.S. Navy, being held for no other reason than political optics, politics, votes, is not a human rights concern already? Is the problem the U.S. government relies on the no resistance, I think, here? Just like we have the Zionistas, no resistance, actually, it seems. So better if it can get its occupied captives to agree with it, like they have in America. If you don't think so, go read the first three enumerated civil rights people enjoy equally under the law in America at U.S. 42 U.S.C. 1981. Quotes, shall be subject to like punishment, pains, and penalty. That's right. I'm not talking about over there. I'm rarely speaking to over there. And punishment and pains in the public health and welfare section, that's Title 42, so you know the public means government, not the occupied people in this Lincolnized post-founding father era in the war of terror against you. And most people agree because they won't spread this word, not a follow, not a comment, not a like, not a challenge. Well, they'd rather sit blissfully by being entertained by others explaining all the ways they're going to get fouled. Now, what sort of military is being set up for your sons and daughters in protecting and advancing the organized criminal syndicates that misguided, unaccountable, delinquent uniparty youths in the West run? We can read about it. Profit-generating and woke brainwashing. What's happening to the U.S. military? This year's Armed Forces Day in the United States takes place in Washington. War Machines appears to be a shadow of its former self, its reputation tarnished by the de facto humiliating defeat in Afghanistan in 2021 and the inability to stop the Houthi attacks on the Red Sea shipping lanes. Can I interject something here? Did you get that? These were Yemeni people being returned to Yemen even after the Yemen government over there, the Houthis, were attacking military ships. This was, such disgrace. The decline of once powerful U.S. armed forces could be traced to the 1990s, a time right after the end of the Cold War, argued former U.S. State Department counterterrorism analyst Scott Bennett. What started with reforms in those who could serve eventually cascaded into an avalanche of social justice, acquainted theorems, and attitudes towards the military. Following that, the 9/11 terrorist attacks triggered a wave of U.S. military interventionism across the world, ostensibly aimed at fighting terrorism, but in reality serving as an enrichment exercise for the military-industrial complex, the very reason for the 9/11 so-called attacks. Quote, so you've seen the military transform from a nationally owned organization to an organization that is really being used to feed corporate entities like Raytheon, McDonnell Douglas, Booz Allen, Hamilton, SAIC, and a myriad defense contractors, missile manufacturers, arms dealers, and that was another death blow to the military because suddenly it became a profit-generating organization. Quote, the U.S. authorities completely corroded and decayed the military from within, causing a lot of the best soldiers, airmen, Marines, and sailors to depart to not re-enlist, he continued, and as a result of all that social pathologies and perversions that have been used and put into the military, you're witnessing the United States military completely coming apart at the seams from the moral point of view and from the esprit de corps point of view. Quote, for the first time in the history of the United States, the American people, I believe, are looking at the military in a sense of disgust and a sense of fear and loathing because it has been used to ignite wars around the world and destroy American reputation in Syria and Afghanistan, Iraq and in Libya and in Ukraine, Bennett added. And now Europeans are also waking up and seeing the U.S. military as one of the biggest threats to world peace. Let me just interject there. But the U.K. military is attacking its people through lies about malinformation, aren't they? So they're involved too. And Britain's not out of this at all anywhere. Probably the leader silently. He also noted that the most Americans are reluctant to enlist because they don't want to join a military that is at odds with their moral, traditional, religious values. All I can say is that's where we withhold consent until these uniparty military-industrial complex delinquent youths are respectful of American moral and traditional values. At the very least, these delinquent, warring, organized criminals, these incompetent, immoral monsters, led by their ego, led by their pocketbook, vanity and arrogance, do not deserve your trust unless this is the reflection of you or the people generally. You have no duty or obligation to support it. You do have a duty, though, and an obligation to arrest it. That's written in the Constitution so that they don't kill you or meat grind your loved ones who were thrown into the furnace to be charbroiled by self-serving American politics under the pretense of national security or other deceit. Comparing the United States military to the Russian military today, Bennett argued that the latter is clearly superior. The Russian military is superior in technology and its manpower. Its technology is superior because the Russian people and the Russian government use their military development of weapons solely for the purpose of defending the country and the people, not to enrich the companies before that manufacture these weapons, he elaborated. Russia's military manufacturing of weapons is solely and completely dedicated to the preservation of the nation and to do it at a cost-effective rate. Meanwhile, U.S. Navy veteran Mike James, who served in Iraq in 2008, observed that the United States military is surprisingly amateurish. Quote, we're surprisingly caught up with such an enormous sense of false superiority and security that there's just really bad decisions made all up and down the chain of command, even at the highest levels. Yeah, just generally quite unprofessional and immature and goofy, he told Sputnik. Just goofy, SH*T, all across up and down the command chain. According to him, Western military science as a whole is essentially an imperfect project and depends on complete hegemony. You have the duty to defend yourself from these immature, unlawful, profit-motivated, immoral, mass-murdering occupiers inside the gates. You have no duty or obligation to become fodder for their next crime spree in foreign lands. You will have been deprived of your constitutional rights to alter or abolish these delinquent youths in the offices of profit of the government or its officers and employees to be interfered with that mission and necessity under the excuse of being sent somewhere else, as I've talked about before. This is beyond conscientious objection. But now getting to the point of self-defense, countryside self-defense, the people, getting to the land and defending that from these people in government, ostensibly doing government, against rogue government pretending to be benevolent. But the world is a very corrupt place, more corrupt than in recent past, it seems, and almost unimaginable type ends are upon us, what's being plotted and planned. It's pretty diabolical. And because here of the potential to create enough of a threat for a direct war, which these big corporations would be profiting at your expense, and of your sons and daughters, and under the guise of jobs, where people are working to do this, the direct threat with the U.S. and Israel, and then potentially escalating to a world at war, I think it's important to consider, as we heard the news, seems like it's over there, it doesn't matter to us, it's different, it's an enemy that we don't need to talk about in Iran, but what may have caused Raisi's copter crash? And this becomes a very interesting problem, and I think we need maybe to do a little bit of investigation on this. President Ibrahim Raisi and a foreign minister, Hussein Amir Abdollahian of Iran, died in a helicopter crash in the Islamic Republic's East Azerbaijan province on Sunday. The Iranian president's helicopter made a hard landing, it was said, after it got into trouble in heavy fog It was also initially reported near the city of Jaffa, around 600 kilometers northwest of the capital, Tehran. Three helicopters were in convoy, and the two others, which carried Iranian Energy Minister Al-Akbar Makharbayan and the Housing Transportation Minister Medhar Bazpash, reaching their destination safely. Helicopters are all-weather vehicles, Vadim Bazikin, an honored Russian helicopter pilot, test pilot, said in an interview with Sputnik. Quote, a helicopter's weakest point is unfortunately the crew, because not many pilots are able to fly in bad weather, adding that it is an experienced crew should know the ABCs of flying over mountainous terrain. Touching upon the possible technical defect of Raisi's U.S.-made Bell 212 helicopter, Bazikin emphasized the security comes first when it comes to the presidential vehicles. He added that even though the presidential helicopter was a very reliable yet outdated vehicle, it was almost certainly equipped with the new engines because of the security considerations. When entering an area of dense fog, the Raisi copter's pilots were obligated to calculate the safe height. An expert went on to say, according to him, the chopper seems to have flown below the permissible height. Quote, the fog is usually only 300 to 500 meters thick. The pilot should have checked meticulously if there was any chance to land, and if not, they should have flown back. There should be no other options, this expert underscored. Bazikin said that he was once involved in a transporting Russian top officials, and that he always picked mature pilots who knew how to say no into continuing the flight amid bad weather. Pilots are like actors. They think they are cool, thinking themselves that if two helicopters earlier flew, they can fly so too, the expert said, referring to Raisi's helicopter and the accompanying choppers. Well, mature pilots, I'm thinking he isn't speaking age here, like delinquents in the United States here, but temperament. And if you've heard me describe the Kobe Bryant crash, the explanation, you know, without evidence of sabotage here, just that aside, because we don't have that evidence yet, I have to agree with the assessment about the flight crew. Things can happen fast and quickly, and pilots get behind the demands of a flying craft. So why, though it does spring quickly to mind to consider sabotage, Mossad or the Zionist agents haven't shown to have been the cause in this. It comes right to mind about this as well. The other problem is, since the first report, these three helicopters were not in fog en route. Now the clarity is coming more of what was really going on. So the first reports may have been tailored for a plausible dodge to avoid escalating a confrontation here. Understand the geopolitics going on as well. And so it's curious that those who died were immediately declared by Iran to be martyrs, which I understand means being killed by an enemy. In fact, it's now reported that the pilot in command of the chopper that Raisi was in ordered the convoy to increase altitude to avoid some clouds forming over a mountain. They weren't even down in the fog. Shortly thereafter, then, the command helicopter just disappeared from view of one of the other helicopters and went into an area below which was in fog. So there likely won't be a quality body of evidence here that can definitely point the finger at anybody more than circumstantially, I'd think. How a helicopter drops from sight as well, or that no mayday call is reported, makes this the more curiouser to me. In particular, someone survived the crash long enough to make a call and said that he didn't know what happened but was in a forest before he too died. That seems to suggest the craft was in some control, but being in the fog, the pilot misjudged the flare at the end of the land and hit the ground really very hard enough. It probably may have broke the craft apart, and then it burst into flame, the other report is. But this would have been only just so hard enough to allow that someone could survive, and not so hard as to land in a relatively straight down plummet, induced, mangled heap that we might find, like we saw that one jet aircraft blown up with the Prigozhin in it, right down it went, big heap, that was it. This thing looks like it has a little bit of trajectory to it. So there was a slight debris trail, which almost seems due to the slope of the hill, which may have been a factor, evidence of either condition, actually. But still, the no May Day call. And I'm not so sure, given the geopolitical wrangling squeezing the U.S. out, that Iran will be telling the truth about the death of President Raisi, even if it were sabotage. Likely, a beneficial narrative from a geopolitical point of view will be announced publicly so as to not escalate matters outside and to the long-term detriment of the methodological plans that have been laid right now to oust the United States and Israel from the region, or Eurasia as this goes, and the future economies that are being hardened against the United States domination as we hear these things. So I don't know if we're going to get the whole thing. These helicopter crashes always interest me. Yes, we can. There's lots that happen, but I'm just wondering about, I don't think that Iran is so willing to finger Mossad or Israel unless they can truly, truly prove it. And in this case, I'm not so sure that's going to be the ability, as there's other pressures coming on Netanyahu. But I think I've said enough here for today. Hope there's something I opened your eyes to that gets you thinking about. Get prepared, folks. That's the most important thing. Get prepared. These geopolitical things are out there. They can bring us into a fever of war and defense that is not healthy. And I think we need to be sharp-minded about that so that you can offer our dissent about how this is all working and who's profiting and who's actually paying the bills, if you will, to us. This is episode of BTW RLM 578. Hope something I said will help you. I'll be with you next week. Tech Tips for Nature Willing.
Echoes call, the hour is near. Behind the woodshed, the truth you'll hear. Every Sunday, the clock strikes three. Hal's voice rolls like thunder, piercing free. Pull up a chair, lean in close. Lessons to learn, dose by dose. Behind the woodshed, no stone unturned. Call by